Commissioner Singleton.
Hello. Sorry, my dog's starting barking. You can hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you great. And your image is coming in very clear.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome, Commissioner Pinkett-Peterson, Chair Pinkett-Peterson.
Hey, good afternoon, Marina.
Hello. Welcome, Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Hi there, how are you?
Good, how are you? Welcome, good. Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Hello. I need a background like the chairs. I think Oscar, no, this
is. We're gonna have to up our game, Vince.
What's that?
We're gonna have to up our game.
I know.
I love the technology. This was actually from our budget town hall that we did, and so we had like everybody who was on my team had these. So Anne on my team made these, so thank you, Anne. So how are we doing on folks arriving, Marina?
I believe we're waiting on Commissioner Moyer.
Okay, well, why don't we give another minute?
Otherwise, we'll have to start.
And we've got all the interpreters?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Hey, Marina, why don't we go ahead and get started?
Sounds good. Okay. We're streaming and we are recording. So we're ready to go.
Great. Thank you so much, Marina. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Multnomah County's third and last public budget hearing on our fiscal year 2026 budget. I'm Jessica Vega Peterson, your Multnomah County Chair. I want to thank everyone for taking the time tonight to join us to share your thoughts and priorities. If you haven't already noticed, today's board meeting is a virtual board meeting, so we're glad everybody was able to log in tonight. Just some tips for those of you who are going to be providing testimony tonight, please mute your mic when not speaking, and then when you're presenting, make sure to unmute your mic and turn on your camera so we can see you. For all presenters, please state your name for the record before speaking. And I just want to remind folks to consider your language in your testimony today. We are streaming not to a very broad audience. So we have many people signed up to provide feedback. I just want to make sure it's not a surprise if this hearing ends up going long tonight. I think we have about 80 people signed up to provide testimony. We appreciate everybody's time and commitment to the process. Before we get started with hearing testimony, I want to let everyone know that interpretations of this hearing are available in American Sign Language, Spanish, Russian, Vietnamese, and Somali. Interpreters, I am going to introduce you quickly since we're in a virtual session. So please raise your hand on screen so that we can see you as I say your name. So we have Paula and Victor for Spanish. Okay, and then we have Zakaria and Bishar for Somali. We have An Hao for Vietnamese. We have Svetlana and Olina for Russian. And for American Sign Language, we have Nancy and Mary. So again, thanks to all the interpreters for providing your talents with us tonight so we can make this meeting as accessible as possible. It's good to be with everyone again tonight for this third public budget hearing. As always, please bear with us if we experience any technical difficulties that might arise during the meeting. Today's budget hearing is one of the ways that Multnomah County collects community feedback on our budget before it's going to be adopted on Thursday, June 12th at the regular meeting of the Multnomah County Commissioners. I would also like to remind people that written testimony on the county's budget can be submitted online throughout our budget process. The form to submit written testimony is at multco.us/budget-feedback. multco.us/budget-feedback. And links to that form are available in Spanish, Russian, Vietnamese, Somali, Simplified Chinese, Chukis on the website. You can also simply email your comments to our board clerk at boardclerk@multco.us. That's boardclerk@multco.us. Hearing from you about this year's proposed budget priorities and how they represent Multnomah County's values is really an essential part of our budgeting process. The feedback that you give us informs our decision making as we continue working towards an adopted county budget in June that is truly representative of the communities we partner with and we serve. You know, many folks have already heard that this is a much tougher budget year for the county than many in recent memory. Despite that, the job of this board is to make the best use of the dollars we have to serve our community's essential needs and ensure resources are going to the people who rely on them the most and whose needs we must prioritize during these challenging times. Multnomah County's budget and priorities are not built in a silo. They're built alongside many partners and the community itself. Our county is built as much by community members who call Multnomah County home as for them, which is why this budget also looks at how we can be a more inclusive, equitable, and thoughtful partner. Hearing from you is part of that commitment, so I'm glad that you're here tonight to share your voice. In addition to providing testimony tonight, I want to encourage folks to consider joining one of our public advisory, our budget advisory committees. Our Office of Community Involvement has really done a lot of work during this budget session to make that available for our community members. So we want to make sure that we have a strong community engagement in this process. So our community budget advisory committees are one of the ways that you can stay involved and get more deeply involved in our budget process. So I hope you consider joining for a future budget session. So joining tonight are my fellow Multnomah County commissioners. Oh, thank you, Marina, for putting the slide up. So this is the email address that you see there is where you can email to get involved in our Office of Community Involvement, whether that is a budget advisory committee or one of the other many ways that you can get involved in Multnomah County as a member of the community. So I'm really glad that my fellow Multnomah County commissioners are here tonight. They're also eager to hear your thoughts and priorities. I would like to invite each of the commissioners to introduce themselves and which district they represent. And if Commissioner, I don't see Commissioner Moyer on yet. So why don't we start with Commissioner Singleton?
Thank you, Chair. Hello, everyone. I'm Shannon Singleton. My pronouns are she and her, and I am the commissioner for District 2 in Multnomah County, which is North and Northeast Portland. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. I'm Commissioner Brim Edwards.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Julia Brim Edwards. I'm the Multnomah County Commissioner from District 3, which is mostly Southeast Portland and a little sliver of Northeast. Thanks for everybody for being here tonight.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Jones Dixon.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everybody, Commissioner or everyone. Commissioner Jones Dixon representing East Multnomah County in District 4.
Thank you so much. And I don't see Commissioner Moyer. She may be having some technical difficulties, but I know she'll log on as soon as she can.
Chair, it looks like Commissioner Moyer is on. Here now.
She's on? Oh, excellent. Commissioner Moyer, if you're, oh, there you are. Welcome.
Sorry, I've been having technical difficulty. Megan Moyer, I'm Commissioner for District 1, and I use she, her pronouns. Are we just introducing ourselves?
Yeah, just like we normally do when we're in the public. So, you know, just introduce yourself and your district.
Okay. And I'm in District 1, which is Southwest Portland, Sauvie Island, unincorporated, Northwest Multnomah County, and Inner Southeast. I-84 all the way to Clackamas and Washington County to around Cesar Chavez.
Thank you so much. And thanks everyone for taking the time to introduce yourselves. I want to remind members of the public that these budget hearings, commissioners, we listen, we don't really engage in testimony. It's a little different when it's virtual. Sometimes when we have people in the room, they want to go like this to show their support. Feel free to do that. But now I'll turn it over to our board clerk, Marina, who will provide a brief overview of written testimony submitted prior to this hearing, and then to talk us through the logistics of the meeting before calling for testimony. Marina, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Today, we have 80 people signed up to testify. As of 5:30 p.m., we received 356 written testimony forms, all of which I have shared with board, has shared with board members and their staff. Interpreters are available in American Sign Language, Spanish, Russian, Vietnamese, and Somali. If you would like to have your testimony interpreted into English, please let us know when it's your turn to testify and an interpreter will assist. If you're using the WebEx platform and want to view closed captioning, click on the CC bubble on the bottom left portion of your screen. I will call four people at a time and give them panelist access. I'll also announce the next four speakers so they are prepared to speak. Please keep your microphone muted until it is your turn to speak. After you are done testifying, I'll revert you back to an attendee. Public testimony is limited to 2 minutes per person. I'll set a timer when you begin speaking and announce when your time is up, at which point please wrap up your sentence. Written testimony on the county budget can be submitted beyond this public hearing by going to mulco.us/budget-feedback or by emailing me at boardclerk@mulco.us. Okay. And Chair, our first four testifiers tonight will be Myra Blum, Vanessa Dewey's, Eric Tucker, and Estelle Williams. The next four in the next group will be Stephanie Perry, Stacy Mingo, Rebecca Lang, and Pastor Lisa Makowski. And Chair, I'll just need 1 minute to move folks over.
Thanks so much, Marina.
And Tasia, if you could just go ahead and give the other folks panelists access. Myra, I'm going to, Myra, you're welcome to begin whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Sorry about that. Hi, Chair Vega Peterson and County Commissioners. My name is Myra Blum, and I use she, her pronouns. I want to thank you for your time and support in the two amendments brought forward for buying back the school-based mental health program. This means more to me than I can express in words. You've heard over the last few months about the services provided by this program, the clients served, and the profound impact the loss of this program would have. What I don't think has been explicitly shared is the unique role the mental health consultant limited duration role provides, which is the role I hold. I believe the position is 745340. This position provides backfill for clinicians who are on extended leave or additional site coverage and support. This allows schools to not have a gap with no mental health services while a clinician is on leave. The flexibility to provide services that would not otherwise be offered and or on a more limited basis. During the last two school years, this position has provided mental health services and support in the following schools: McDaniel High School, Jefferson High School, Russell Elementary School, David Douglas High School, George Middle School, and North Gresham Elementary School. Notably, North Gresham Elementary School is not currently a school the school-based mental health program provides services. However, the school identified a significant need during an ongoing period of crisis. Due to the flexibility of the limited duration position, I've been able to provide consistent mental health support for the current school year. This limited duration position won't be found written anywhere, but this position exists and is in the in Commissioner Moyer's proposed amendment. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Vanessa. You're next.
Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners, thank you for the opportunity to speak today. For the record, my name is Vanessa Deweese, and I serve as the Director of Permanent Supportive Housing at New Narrative, a nonprofit committed to helping individuals with serious and persistent mental illness thrive in their communities. I'm here today to voice our strong support for continued funding for the programs included in program offer number 40112, including Douglas Fir, Cultivating Community, Bridging Connections, and the ICM program. These programs offer not only housing, but critical wraparound supports. These are individuals at high risk of chronic homelessness with many complex behavioral health needs who would otherwise cycle through institutions or be left unsheltered. Permanent supportive housing works. We see people stabilize, gain a sense of dignity, and rebuild their lives. But housing alone is not enough. Cultivating Community and Bridging Connections provide the short-term shelter and crisis stabilization that offer people a safe place to stay while they work towards permanent housing. These trauma-informed programs are essential for individuals who cannot access their traditional shelter due to behavioral health needs. They bridge the gap between street houselessness and long-term stability. Equally vital is the county's investment in intensive case management, or ICM. The ICM team provides community-based individualized supports to help people navigate extreme barriers to housing. When paired with long-term rental assistance, ICM enables some of our most vulnerable community members to remain housed and supported in the community. This work is life-changing and in many cases, life-saving. Together, these programs form a continuum that embodies the goals of the local implementation plan, reducing chronic homelessness, advancing equity, and expanding behavioral health services across shelter, transitional housing, and permanent housing. The partnership between Multnomah County and providers like New Narrative is making real progress, but only if the funding continues. Thank you for your leadership, your partnership, and your steadfast commitment to our shared vision of a healthier, more just community. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Estelle. Estelle, are you available to share? Hi, Estelle. Are you available to share? I'll come back to Estelle. We have our next group, but the group after that will be Vadim Mazursky, Emily Galvin Almanza, Natalie Ariola, and Alexandra Slaughterback. Stephanie, are you available to share? Stephanie Perry.
Yes, sorry, I was trying to unmute.
Great, you may begin whenever you're ready.
Yeah, okay, my name is Stephanie Perry. I go by they, them, and I wanted to speak to you on the issue of homelessness. I know that the budget is very tight this year, but I want to ask that you continue support for those who are on housing vouchers. Like myself, I'm going to find myself homeless again in February because as far as I know, that's what's going to happen. But not just in general, but I'm asking for those who are significantly disabled. I know I'm not the only person, but I am now a wheelchair user. I've had my toes amputated. I'm an insulin dependent diabetic. I have MRSA. I've been getting skin infections for the past year. And I've been denied the permanent supportive housing vouchers, though I did get on a 12-month voucher with Home Forward. And so I would just like to ask that people who are on housing vouchers, especially those with chronic health problems that are severely disabled, have their vouchers continued rather than be thrown out on the streets in 10 months. I read a recent article about a month ago that stated that the estimated cost for a shelter bed in Portland runs between $22,000 and $52,000 a year. But in a low income studio apartment like mine, that comes out to just a little over $14,000 a year. And I would just like to see disabled people like myself, because I've heard stories from a few other people. One woman who even has cancer, who stands to be thrown back out on the streets when her voucher ends. And I would just like you to consider some way to continue to support those who are on these 12-month vouchers, especially those with chronic health issues and chronic disabilities. And that's about all I have to say. I do appreciate everything because I have been all over the country and this is the only
time is
place.
Up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Next we have Stacy Mingo. Stacy, are you able to speak?
Good evening. I am not good with these electronic and apps, so hopefully everyone can hear me. Okay, well, good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and the rest of the commissioners who are here tonight. I am so glad to see you. Hi, Vince. My name is Stacy Mingo. I am a native here of the city. I am also a worker, a direct service worker with Self Enhancement Incorporated. And in my job, I get the pleasure and the privilege of walking individuals from houseless to housed. I get to walk people from uncertainty to certainty. But what the problem is with this work is that us who are doing the work are like one check away, if not already needing the work that we provide. And why I'm here today is just to come with my heart out saying help is needed all around. For those of us who do the direct service, those of us who are inspiring and encouraging, we need that as well. Because how can we pour into someone from an empty vessel? We have very many of us direct service workers working two and three jobs just to make ends meet. We come with an income, 30 seconds of income that is below the 60% AMI. We're about $50,000 a year. All I'm asking is for you guys look at the budget and put the money where the heart is, because the heart is what's helping the community. Thank you for your time, even though you couldn't see my smile.
Next, we have Pastor Lisa Makowski. Lisa, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and Multnomah County Commissioners. My name is Lisa Makowski. I live and serve as a pastor in District 4 in East Multnomah County. Thank you for the opportunity to come and testify today. At Anthem, we've been serving this community for the last 10 years and are looking to expand those services by building a day center in partnership with the Art of Living Well. This building is a staple in the Fairview community, and our hopes for opening a day and resource center to formalize services we've provided for many over the years at a much smaller scale would be realized with an innovative partnership between the county, the city of Fairview, and multiple organizations partnering together. We feel this location would be a great fit for a new East County Day Center, since this building, as I said, has been a staple in the community, hosting 5 churches, 2 basketball teams and tournaments, over 350 events, 3 schools, including one serving as a designated area to pick up children in emergency situations, 9 summer programs for youth, Christmas and Easter events, AA meetings, and a whole host of other events. We've partnered closely with the city of Fairview for many years, supporting volunteerisms and more. Our location has been a repeated spot for visitors seeking support like Tom. Tom is an African-American adult male experiencing homelessness who recently started coming to Anthem for respite and support. Last Sunday, we hosted an all-church barbecue, which Tom attended. He sat and communed with the members, breaking bread with community. He used our restrooms, eats with us, and et cetera. Tom is like countless others who've sought support at this building for many, many years. As stated at the beginning of my testimony, we hope to expand this on a formalized basis in partnership with the city of Fairview and Multnomah County. To share a little bit about the building, it boasts over 3,100 square feet with over 7,000 square feet that would be dedicated just to day space services.
Time is up.
Thank you.
The group after our next 4 will be Margaret Rogers, Emily Azor, Karen Chire, and Shriyana Shrestha. Okay, next up is Vadim. Vadim, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, hello everybody. Hello, Chair and County Commissioners. I'm here to testify in support of the board fully funding the district attorney's budget request. Recent DA efforts has made a direct and positive impact on high impact crimes that affect both individuals and businesses. The city-county partnership on the Organized Retail Theft Task Force and Auto Theft Task Force have been critical. And I just looked this up. So in last year, there were 5,474 stolen cars in Portland, which decreased from a little over 8,000 the year before and 10,900 in 2020. If you do the math, that means if you live in Portland your whole life, you'll probably get your car stolen. So I think it's very critical that we fully fund the DA because we are seeing that decrease. The proposed budget cuts would significantly reduce the resources available for these successful programs, potentially reversing these hard-won gains. Importantly, victims of crime deserve timely, compassionate, and equitable support through the legal process. The MCDA's Victim Assistance Program provides crucial services to thousands of crime victims annually, including crisis intervention and emotional support, guidance through the criminal justice program, assistance with protective orders, connecting community resources, and helping crime victims' compensation claims. Again, with a budget cut of any sort, this would suffer. And continued investment is necessary to protect recent progress, sustain system coordination, and address the ongoing impact of these crimes on economic and neighborhood stability. Investing in public safety is not just about prosecution. It's about creating a foundation of security upon which our community can thrive. When neighborhoods feel safe, they flourish. When businesses feel secure, they invest. When victims receive justice, they heal. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Emily Galvin Almanza. Emily, are you able to unmute and begin?
I'm here. Thank you so much for having me. It's really an honor to be here tonight. My name is Emily Galvin Almanza. I'm the co-founder and co-executive director of the Partners for Justice program. And we have been supporting the Metropolitan Public Defenders and Multnomah Defenders in implementing their judicial peer support and navigation services program. These are the public defense-based case managers. I just wanted to speak for a short moment about how this work that they are doing is evidence-based and part of a national movement. I founded this program back in 2018 to try and help public defenders become an engine of public safety, public health, and economic mobility. Just a year behind bars can shave 2 years off a person's expected lifespan and increase their risk of death by 16%. 80% of people come home from incarceration with some kind of long-term illness. And cumulatively, American families every year lose $370 billion because of reduced wages due to prior incarceration. In Multnomah County, we've managed to put brilliant wraparound services inside the public defender, which is a phenomenal locus of support. It's upstream, has a confidential relationship with clients so we can tailor services really well to their needs. It's an efficient use of services since it's a provider they're already accessing. And we can get all of our peer organizations more appropriate referrals from inside the public defender's office. Now, I know this works because this program has worked with about 850 people since its inception, but it's provided them with over 2,000 services at a 75% success rate. This program is helping people find housing and jobs. There's a ton of evidence on our website at partnersforjustice.org/evidence about how providing someone with healthcare can lower their risk of engaging in crime by 30%. Housing, 80%. These interventions that we're doing, you know, getting somebody a job cuts their risk of being rearrested in half. We are turning public defense into something of national importance, echoing what's happening in over 20 states and over 40 other locations around the country. Time is up. Thank you.
Next, we have Rebecca Lang.
Hi, can you hear me? All right. Hi, I'm Rebecca Lang. I'm here with Ground Score Association, part of Trash for Peace. And I'm here with a lot of my coworkers to ask you to please reconsider your budget decisions to not fund employment services. Employment services are one of the most important things that we can offer to help homeless people get out of where they're at. It is not a handout, it is a hand up. It is one of the few things that you can fund that will return itself in dividends. Every year, it will pay you back more and more as the ripples go out, because once we can help ourselves, we can help other people. And that's what Ground Score does. It helps ourselves and we help other people. It helped me when I started with Ground Score. I didn't have housing, I was on drugs, and I didn't have a job and I didn't know what to do. And now I'm housed and I'm clean and I am part of a community. I regularly do outreach and I am here trying to be a voice for the people that have not had voices. Regularly the homeless are overlooked, especially the neurodivergent people that are on the streets. neurodivergency is a huge issue that I don't really hear addressed too often. And the problem is that if you look at the number of homeless people in Portland, it has the large group has progressed every few years to be the same age group, which means it is the same people being homeless because they are not getting what they need. And what they need is services that fit them, meeting them where they are. And Ground Score is one of those things. It's employment, it's rent. Everyone that got off the streets will be back on the streets without employment services. Thank you for your time, and I really hope you reconsider funding us. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Natalie Areola.
Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson, Commissioner Moyer, Singleton, Brim Edwards, and Jones Dixon. My name is Natalie Areola. I am the Program Specialist Senior at the Homeless Services Department, where I lead the Veterans Employment and System Access Portfolio. I'm here on my own time, and I'm here to ask you all for the reinstatement of employment services. You all just heard from some of the amazing folks at our contracted Ground Score Association, the Trash for Peace contract. But I'm here to share my experience as someone who has seen firsthand how crucial these HSD-funded employment programs have been in not just helping our unhoused neighbors maintain dignity, gain soft skills, and work experience, but also to help folks get housed and maintain housing. Most recently in my experience, I've got to go out and work alongside a lot of these folks who seen firsthand how folks have been getting their lives have changed by just starting off in one of our apprenticeship programs through providers that we've been contracted with, or even through just day labor programs that have been funded through these programs, through the county. I realize that these investments, while they are minimal, because I do think that they are very, very minimal investments, I think it is make a really great impact in the work that we are doing and in keeping and people maintaining housing. I just wanted to come here and share my experience and make sure that we are voicing that this is how important the work that we do. I know that when I came to the Homeless Services Department, I came here because I believe in the work that we do, and I still do to this day. And so I just urge you all to continue to, I realize that you all are making really hard decisions, but just wanted to make sure to voice that. So thank you all very much for your time, and I hope you all have a good rest of your evening.
Thank you. Next, we have Alexandra Slaughterbeck. Are you able to speak, Alexandra?
Yes, good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. My name is Lexi Slaughterbeck, and I'm an attorney with the Community Law Division at Metropolitan Public Defenders. I'm also a North Portland resident, so thank you for your service, Commissioner Singleton. I know you've heard from many of my colleagues already throughout these hearings, so I'm going to use my time to share the real-life impact of three of the four programs that are now facing devastating cuts in the proposed budget. First, under our contract with the Joint Office, Program Offer 30100, a community law attorney represented an unhoused mother and survivor of domestic violence. Like many survivors, her abuser had destroyed her credit, prevented her from getting housing, and even caused a traffic incident that ended up putting a hold on her license. Working with her attorney, she was able to address the rental debt, expunge the eviction from her record, reinstate her driver's license, and provide a housing support letter to future housing opportunities that outlined all of that progress. As a result, she and her children were moved from a shelter and into permanent housing. Second, thanks to one-time only funding through our Project Reset program, an attorney represented a client who hadn't had a conviction in nearly a decade, yet remained burdened by that court debt. The court debt also blocked expungement. Once the debt was cleared through Project Reset, the attorney was able to expunge the client's entire criminal record, allowing them to secure employment and in the recovery and addiction field, which was a long-held goal of his. Finally, with one-time only funding from the Expungement Access System Improvement Program, We were able to help a client referred by the DA's office who had mistakenly tried to expunge a case that was not hers. Her attorney was able to review the record, identify other eligible cases, and successfully expunge those. One of the cases was not eligible, but they were able to work with the DA's office in order to jointly petition the court to vacate that eviction, or excuse me, conviction, leaving the client with a clean record and a fresh start. Our clients come to us desperate, overwhelmed, stuck in a legal system that too often works against them. County funding for MPD, caseworkers, and thank you for your time.
After our next four speakers, the speakers will be Jabri Willis, Patricia Moore, Jania Moore, and Century Christmas. Next up, we have Margaret Rogers. Margaret, are you able to begin?
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
All right. Hi, my name's Margie Rogers. I'm a Multnomah County resident, a community health nurse in corrections, and a member of the Oregon Veteran Association. One of the quotes from Martin Luther King stated, "Of all the forms of inequality, injustice in healthcare is the most shocking and inhumane. And as a county, we must do better. Our community deserves it. The health and safety of our neighbors, including vulnerable populations such as newborns, are at risk with these tests. As a nurse, I've seen patients struggle when vital services disappear, and we cannot let this continue. Gutting or eliminating life-saving and life-changing programs is inconsistent with our county values and mission. I'm advocating today for continued funding for three critical health programs, the Nurse Family Partnership, Communicable Disease Prevention and Tracing, and the STI Prevention and Treatment. First, STIs like syphilis have risen 218% in 2022 from 6 years prior in Multnomah County. Our STI clinic is a lifeline offering testing, treatment, and education, including follow-up care for adults in custody. STIs are like warrants, and if you don't treat them, they never go away. Next, our communicable disease department, vital during COVID-19, has been slashed since the height of the pandemic. This leaves the county unprepared for the health crises in the future. We cannot afford this cycle of panic and neglect. And finally, the Nurse Family Partnership Program, it saves lives and dollars, paying for itself in long-term health and societal benefits. Eliminating this program is penny-wise and pound-foolish, abandoning newborns before their first death. The first wealth is health, and these cuts threaten our community's health and safety. The Oregon Nurses Association and I ask you to invest in these programs to build a healthier Multnomah County. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Emily Azor. Emily, are you able to begin?
Yes, I am. Hi, good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and Board of Commissioners. My name is Emily Azor, and I am a program specialist for the Homeless Services Department, and I'm a proud member, a proud union member of Ask Me Local 88. I'm here this evening to share my concerns as a member of our community about the proposed employee layoffs impacting the county, specifically the layoffs within the Homeless Services Department. Laying off staff right now is unnecessary and harmful, especially when the county financial results consistently turn out better than what's forecast. Vital services are being cut that will weaken the trust workers have built within the community and damage employee morale at large. Within the Homeless Services Department, there are several staff positions that are being cut that will impact the department's ability to uphold its mission to the community. One of these cuts is to reduce the communications department. During a time where the public really needs more transparency with the Homeless Services Department, it really seems like a concerning approach to reduce the comms department, especially as we're going through transitions within the Homeless Services Department. The public really deserves this transparency and effective communication to understand the incredible work that we do, and I'm concerned that this will not happen without adequate staffing and expertise. Additionally, our assertive engagement team in Homeless Services Department is being cut in half. The assertive engagement model is the foundation of all service delivery within HSD, and the staff on our equity team in these positions ensure that we have consistent, equitable, and trauma-informed service delivery across the Homeless Services Department. With the reduction in the assertive engagement staff across the county, we are reducing our investment in equity positions, which is something that I know our board has repeatedly affirmed their commitment to. I really want to ask that you review these reductions for the communications department, the assertive engagement team, and all HSD staff, as our work will be severely impacted without their expertise. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a great evening.
Thank you. Next, we have Karen Cherry. Karen, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I can. Good evening. My name is Karen Cherry, and I'm a business owner in District 1. I'm deeply concerned about the proposed budget cuts that threaten public safety. In just the past 2 days, I've experienced 4 shoplifting incidents at my business. One individual was taken to jail due to a prior warrant, while another was cited and released because the jail could not book them. The situation as untenable as reflects the urgent need for more resources. Moreover, we are now up to 15 businesses within a 3-block radius of my business that have closed, with more confirmed to shut down by the end of the year. The number one reason for these closures is a lack of food safety in our neighborhood, and it's time for the county to care more than just the marginalized individuals. We must also support the businesses and residents who pay taxes into our community. With 3 pending court cases, I recently learned that one assistant district attorney is managing a staggering caseload of 500 cases. How is that even manageable? This lack of support undermines the justice system and leaves victims like myself without necessary recourse. I urge you to prioritize opening more jail beds and increasing the number of assistant DAs and public defenders. We must invest in our law enforcement and judicial system to ensure safety and accountability in our community, especially for initiatives like the Auto Theft Task Force that directly affect local businesses and residents. Let's work together to protect the safety and livability of Multnomah County. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Shrajana. Are you able to unmute and begin?
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Members of the commission, my name is Shrajana Shrestha. I'm an assistant professor of practice with Oregon State University Extension, supporting the Metro Master Gardener program. I would like to highlight the important work our Master Gardener volunteers do to support Multnomah County families. One key initiative is Seed to Supper, a free beginner-friendly gardening program co-created by OSU Extension and the Oregon Food Bank. It empowers individuals to grow healthy food on a limited budget using practical, low-cost techniques. Classes are offered in English and Spanish and are designed to promote food security and self-sufficiency. This year, volunteers are teaching Seed to Supper at Westmoreland Union Manor and partnering with Outgrowing Hunger to reach diverse community gardeners and include culturally relevant crops. Outcomes include reduced grocery cost, better access to fresh produce, and stronger community connections. Currently, we are only able to offer the Master Gardener program in Multnomah County, thanks to a generous donor and temporary funding, but this is not sustainable. County support is essential to maintain and expand the program. There is a waiting list of 1,500 people eager to become volunteers and serve your communities. I urge you to consider funding OSU Extension in the county's budget. Together, we can help Multnomah County thrive. Thank you.
Thank you. After the next 4 folks, we'll have Denise Scott, Philip Berlin, Sahan McKelvey, and Terrence Hayes. Our next speaker is Jabri Willis. Jabri, are you available to begin?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
All right. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Jabri Willis. I'm a regional manager at Self Enhancement, Inc., and have served the agency and its 17,000 students and families for nearly a decade. I lead a team of 9 superheroes that have dedicated their lives to serving our most vulnerable students and families. We teach Black boys and girls at the elementary school level how to read at grade level via high dosage tutoring. We provide stability to families at their most vulnerable times. Through mentorship, we maintain a 98% graduation rate for all of our students. We put our last names on every student and are committed to their success. I see those same faces in my neighborhood. I see them at the grocery store. I see them at church on Sunday. They're my daughter's best friends. They're my nieces, nephews, cousins. They're my community. We don't get the opportunity to turn this off. This isn't a job. we have an obligation and a responsibility to leave our communities better than we found them. Commissioners, here's where you come in. You have the power to make sure these results continue and are adequately funded. What a privilege and an honor. The ask is adding $2 million into the SUN system and appropriately funding successful families. The future of our communities starts with today's investment into our young people. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. once said, "It's all right to tell a man to lift himself up by his own bootstraps, but it is cruel to say to a bootless man that he ought to lift himself up by his own bootstraps." Our community is bootless and has been for decades. Not only are we asking for a set of boots, but build us a store so we can sustain us for generations. Let's do it together, and it starts today. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Patricia Moore. Patricia, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good evening, Chair and County Commissioners. My name is Patricia Moore. I stand before you as living proof of what comprehensive family support can achieve. Today, I have an amazing career at Self Enhancement Incorporated and have successfully operated a small business with my husband for over 10 years. After graduating high school and having my first child, I found myself in an unhealthy relationship working two jobs while trying to attend college. Without wraparound services, domestic violence support, early Head Start home visiting, and housing assistance, I truly believe we wouldn't be where we are today. Each worker didn't just provide a service. They helped me to see and achieve my goals while ensuring my son had the foundation he needed to thrive. This is what the Successful Families Program fundamentally understands. Kids perform best when surrounded by nurturing adults, and kids are best supported when their entire family is supported. I agree that maintaining successful families alongside SUN and family resource navigators would ensure a comprehensive approach. However, the budget lacks funding to accomplish that. Successful Families has been a deep investment specific to David Douglas and Reynolds Youth of Color, and there's no indication in the SUN program offering that this will continue. The SUN system serves nearly 18,000 children across 94 schools, but is missing the intentional family building component that community schools require. Without targeted investment, youth of color will experience disproportionate negative impacts. I'm asking you to allocate the additional $2 million needed to allow SUN programs to incorporate Successful Families programming in its entirety. The proven success of this program shouldn't fall through funding gaps. This comprehensive investment isn't just a budget line item. It's an investment in stories like mine. It's ensuring that families facing domestic violence, housing instability, and educational barriers have the wraparound support that creates pathways to prosperity. Fund this work fully, and you'll see more business owners, more community leaders, more families who break cycles of poverty and build generational wealth. The Successful Families Program can make this happen. It just needs the resources to do it on the scale of our community deserves. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Jania Moore. Are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Janiyah Moore, and I am an in-school coordinator at Roosevelt High School through the incredible nonprofit known as Self-Enhancement, Inc. Tonight, I come to you on behalf of the Successful Families Program. This program has helped serve numerous children and their families. I have personally seen how a program like this has helped our children succeed. How can we expect our children to worry about academics when they are worried about their likes being off? How can we expect children to focus in school if they know when they get home they're packing up their things with nowhere to go because their parents got an eviction notice to vacate the premises? How can we expect our children to succeed with no positive role models in their lives during their own trials and tribulations that they may face? Growing up, when I was in high school, I had friends whose only positive influences were our coordinators and mentors. They spoke life into me and my peers on our most challenging days and never treated us differently because of our circumstances. One of these same friends is now a dental hygienist. Being a kid in the program and now a staff member in the same program, I've seen that children do perform the best when surrounded by a nurturing and caring adult. I don't want our communities to be robbed of this positive, uplifting, and for some, life-changing experience. So today, I ask of you all to please incorporate Successful Families into the SUN service system, along with an additional allocation of $2 million to support the Successful Families program that has helped uplift the families in our communities. Thank you all for listening.
Thank you. Next, we have Centauri. Centauri, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right. Good evening, Chair and members of the board. My name is Centauri Christmas. I serve as an in-school coordinator at Grant High School and a youth advocate with Self-Enhancement, Inc. I'm here today to urge this body to prioritize permanent housing options over temporary shelter strategies. Our organization receives approximately 600 eviction-related calls every month. These are our parents, our youth, and our elders reaching out for help. Right now, we can only assist about 60 of those households, which means we're turning away about 500 families every month. We must acknowledge the burden this creates, not only on the adults, but on the youth that we serve. Housing instability disrupts education, mental health, and long-term outcomes for our youth. We must do better, especially when it costs us less to do better. It costs approximately $35,000 per year to house someone, while it costs around $82,000 per year to keep someone in a pod shelter. That's more than double the cost for a less effective and less humane outcome. Between 2021 and 2022, rents raised here in Portland by 39%, nearly double the national average, resulting in a 30% increase in homelessness. While these numbers have declined, half of Portland renters are still rent burdened, spending over 30% of our monthly income on housing. One in four renters pay more than 50% of their income just to keep a roof over their head. Expanding shelter funding while cutting the very programs that help people move out of the shelters and into the homes is working backwards. Last year in Portland, only one in five people exiting the shelter system moved into permanent housing. That should concern us all. That's not just fiscally irresponsible, it's ethically unacceptable. If we want different outcomes, we must choose different priorities. We need bold leadership to follow the proven methods. So I urge you, let's stop the revolving door and let's commit to a housing strategy that prioritizes stability, the dignity, and the future of our youth and the families that we serve. Thank you.
Thank you. After our next four speakers, we'll have Mandy Campos, Chris Copland, Alicia Sullivan, and Toy Fan. Next up, we have Denise Scott. Denise, are you able to unmute and begin?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, perfect. Good evening, Chair and Commissioner. My name is Denise Scott. I'm a housing coordinator for PSH Supporting Housing Program at Self-Enhancement. Every day I work directly with both families and individuals experiencing homelessness, guiding them through the process of finding safe, stable housing and support them as they rebuild their lives. I'd like to share a story with you of one family that came through the PSH program. When they arrived, they were navigating complex challenges of homelessness with their children out of school, parents struggling to find work through SEI hostility approach, including individualized case management, employment support, and mental health resources. We were able to help them find secure and permanent housing. Today, the family is thriving. The kids are back in school. The families are working, and they finally have a place that they can call home. This is just one example for incredible impact we do every day. We work with individuals who face years of housing instability. One man I work with that have been homeless for over a decade, cycling through shelters and temporary placement through PSH program. He's now in has a safe place to live and accessing wraparound services he needs to stay housed and healthy. He is rebuilding his life step by step. These stories show that with the right support, housing is more just a roof over your head. It is a foundation for stability, health, and opportunity. Your continued to fund and partnership are critical in making this work possible. With your support, we can ensure that families and individuals in our community have a chance to move from crisis to stability and building a brighter future for themselves and their children. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Philip Berlin. Philip, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Good evening, Commissioner. My name is Phil Berlin. I'm a as the Homeless Housing Supervisor with Self-Enhancement, a culturally specific organization committed to supporting African-American families in achieving housing stability and long-term success. Before I discuss the value of culturally specific providers in permanent supportive housing, I want to thank you for your commitment to the African-American community in the proposed budget. This acknowledgement is meaningful as we work together to address the deep racial disparities in housing and homelessness. Culturally specific care isn't an add-on. It's essential to building trust, engagement, and long-term stability, especially in communities that have faced historic marginalization. I have seen firsthand how providers who reflect and understand the lived experience of the people they serve can transform outcomes. Without that connection, we see barriers to trust and retention and ultimately impact to the success of the program designed to stabilize lives. This is especially true in permanent supportive housing, where affordable housing is paired with wraparound services like mental health care, case management, and employment support. It's a proven model that helps people not just survive, but recover, stabilize, and thrive. For the African-American community, which remains disproportionately impacted by homelessness, PSH offers a real and lasting pathway out of housing insecurity. I urge your support in approving Commissioner Singleton's amendments to prioritize ongoing funding for permanent supportive housing and reserving one-time funding for shelter services. This approach addresses both immediate needs and long-term solutions while making a deeper and more equitable investment in our community. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Sahan McKelvey. Are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. My name is Sahan McKelvey, and I'm the Director of Advocacy and Engagement at Self-Enhancement, Inc. I would like to echo my sentiments from last week in expressing appreciation to you for listening and for the work that was done to stand up children, families, and communities of color in this budget. There are a few rapid-fire notes and support for some submitted amendments that I would like to lift up that I believe would allow us to serve our most vulnerable communities even better. First and always, please trade a budget note that calls for true rebasing of all county contracts to ensure that outcomes and spending are aligned in a way that allows direct service staff to be paid a livable wage. Next, please take an even bolder step to stand up funding to support our children and the communities that surround them by allocating an additional $2 million to integrate successful families into the SUN service system. I would love to see an amendment to this effect prior to the deadline. I would urge support of the chair's amendment to roll over American Rescue Plan revenue to increase funding available for rent assistance in fiscal year 26. And I would urge us all to go further in increasing funding for rent assistance in the coming year. I would urge support for Commissioner Singleton's amendments to stand up PSH funding as ongoing and convert ongoing funding for shelters to one-time only funding. If our PSH systems are performing well, then that reduces the longevity of our need for funding for shelter. I would urge support of Commissioner Singleton's amendment to fully fund the Homeless Services Department program for navigation and service coordination. I would urge support for Commissioner Jones-Dixon's amendments to add funding for housing placement and retention in some of our East County cities. And I would urge support for the joint amendment from Commissioner Singleton and Brim Edwards regarding the funding for income acquisition and employment programs. Again, I would love to see an amendment for successful families, and I thank you all for listening tonight.
Thank you. Next, we have Terrence Hayes. Terrence, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good evening, my name is Terrence Hayes, and I wanna thank all of you for the hard work you're putting into dealing with having to cut all of these budgets in a respectful way. I'm sure that cannot be easy. I'm here today to request that Homeless Services Department start prioritizing the sheltering of families and immigrant families. We have heard from the very few family shelter options that exist in this county that it's not enough, and because these are the type of people who are hiding from some of our most acute cases living outside. They are not being counted accurately and therefore are not being given the priority they deserve. I want to specifically thank Commissioner Singleton for the work she has been doing in convening this board to discuss shelter options and their outcomes. We see that most other cities around this country are using motel shelters specifically for these families in need, because families are not permitted in a lot of our other shelters, nor are they permitted in the pod villages. It makes sense to me that we would use our most expensive shelter resources specifically for families and not necessarily for individuals. We have heard reports from our county board in the past that motel shelters are the most expensive and least effective resource. Why not use that resource on people who just need a hand up to move into permanent supportive housing? It seems that that seems like a no-brainer, that these folks would need to sit in the shelter as long as some of the other more acute cases require, meaning we should be able to get more families through the system at a faster rate than some of the people who are currently in shelters in these motels. Let's stop the bottleneck and get these vulnerable, deserving families the help that they deserve and need. Thank you.
Thank you. After our next four folks, we'll have Estelle Williams, Derica Theobald, Megan Smith, and Andrew Wilson. Okay, Mandy, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Perfect. Okay. And hello, Chair Jessica Vega Peterson and County Board. My name is Mandy Campos. I work as the Tenant Education and Support Specialist with the Community Alliance of Tenants. I use she, her pronouns. I want to take this time to talk about the proposed chair's budget that would cut program offer 25131C, which funds a part of the Community Alliance of Tenants Renters Rights Hotline and Tenant Education Services. Having a safe, stable place to live is foundational to many of the other intersections of community care and public safety. Recent data shows more people are entering homelessness than exiting it. Notably, this does not begin to capture the fact that there is an underrepresented population of community members caught between housing instability and homelessness. Keeping and supporting community members to maintain stable housing is homeless prevention, because many of these households are just one paycheck away from losing everything. This often affects the most marginalized communities, including Black, Indigenous, people of color. And I want to remind the board that just 2 days ago, we celebrated Memorial Day, which is also the anniversary of the 1948 Vanport flood that displaced predominantly Black community members of Vanport, who later faced redlining and then further displacement through gentrification. This is just one example of the still living history of how this city and this county still owes a great ongoing debt to the communities of color in regards to systemic racism in housing. While shelters are essential services, they are and will always be a band-aid to the ongoing bleeding wound of rising rents, lacking resources, and evictions that our county and community is failing to properly treat. This critical funding prevents homelessness before it starts. These programs are low cost, community driven, and serves many tenants. Thank you.
Thank you. Estelle, are you able to unmute and speak? Hello, Estelle, can you hear us? Okay, let's try Chris Copeland. Are you able to unmute and speak?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Great. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. My name is Chris Copeland and I'm a program manager at JOIN. Thank you for the opportunity to testify tonight. This year's budget deficit is a profound challenge, and it threatens our ability to execute the best evidence-based practices and service provision. I want to call the commissioners to fund Housing First at Scale. Housing first is thrown around as a buzzword. It's one that is being, threatened at the federal level. And it's really important that we both fund this system of services locally at the scale required to do the job correctly, and also do public education. We had a historic bond passed before COVID, and there was so much great work that went into educating the public about why we were doing the work this way. I think we need to return to that at this time when the political winds are shifting. Along with that, JOIN serves 1,000 people a year who are going through the hard work and the personal perseverance of trying to transition back into stable housing. And it is a difficult time to retain our staff. We have highly skilled staff who are really dedicated, and our existing funding is insufficient. So I appreciate the leadership of the county commissioners. I ask that you lean into funding these services. There's been so many great, so much great testimony tonight, but these the housing problem isn't going away. As much as we talk about disappearing it this year, we need a long-term vision. So I appreciate the leadership of Commissioner Singleton in trying to reinforce our funding for permanent supportive housing. That is part of the solution. Across the board, we need a long-term vision of this issue, because more people are becoming houseless, more people are in jeopardy of losing their housing every year. And so we have to hold true to our values. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next, we have Alicia Sullivan. Alicia, are you able to unmute and begin?
Thank you. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good evening, County Chair and Commissioners. My name is Alicia Sullivan, and I'm the Executive Director of the Willamette Light Brigade. We're the nonprofit arts organization that manages the Morrison Bridge Lighting Program in collaboration with Multnomah County, as well as the popular Portland Winter Light Festival. The festival is a family-friendly event that harnesses our community's ravenous appetite for art to bring much-needed foot traffic, positivity, and excitement to the central city and neighborhoods. Currently, we are launching an ambitious and yet practical initiative to illuminate more of Portland's bridges and bring some of the momentum of the festival to the waterfront year-round. The Illuminate Bridge City project seeks to light as many of Portland's bridges as possible with colorful, dynamic, color-changing LEDs. The initiative would boost tourism, increase foot traffic, activity, and safety on the waterfront at night, and highlight causes and celebrations and movements important to county residents. As we begin this project, we're developing a master plan to create a vision for bridge lighting, and we're conducting a study to understand the economic impacts of this project. We humbly request the county invest in this planning phase as a partner and a modest funder with an investment of $30,000 to $50,000, which will provide a match for dollars already raised from the private and tourism sectors. The support would significantly impact the project and allow for the creation of a collaborative and cohesive master plan. Thank you. I also want to advocate for the continued funding allocated for the Earthquake Ready Burnside Bridge project. This project already has dynamic color-changing lighting included, and it's a forward-thinking bridge design that will serve as a beacon for the future. I understand there are numerous priorities to balance, but I urge you to consider the potential of this project. Thank you so much for your time and for your service during this challenging season.
Thank you. Next, we have Thuy Phan. Are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello, my name is Thuy Phan. I use she, her pronouns, and I'm here to ask you to restore funding for eviction prevention, the program number 251-31C. I live in Multnomah County, and like many of you, I see the growing number of people living on our streets. Not long ago, my 7-year-old son asked me why people are living in tiny houses, he mean the tents that he see around town. So he even offered me to use the money he saved from his birthday and his Lunar New Year to buy food for those holding sites at the intersections. If a child like mine understands the urgency and want to help, I hope those in power like you all will consider it too. Cutting eviction prevention funding will only add to our crisis. We don't need more tents on our street. We need real solutions. I also work at the Community Alliance of Tenants. When I stand by renters in the last 8 years in court through the issue and hear their stories every day, I've seen firsthand how just $100,000 can help over 2,000 people stay in their homes. Eviction prevention works. It keeps family together and off the streets. Now is not time to pull back. I think it's a time to show leadership and compassion by protecting the programs that protect our neighbors. Thank you for your time and considering.
Thank you. After our next group, we'll have Todd Littlefield, Destiny Maddox, Hannah Schneider, and Anna Korniski. Next, we have Derica Theobald. Are you able to unmute and begin?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. Thank you, Chair Vega Peterson and County Commissioners, for the opportunity to let me speak today. My name is Derica Theobald. I'm a freshman at Lincoln High School, and my family and I have been involved with Block 14 since 2020 after hearing about the unjust events that occurred there. I'm here today to encourage the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners to approve a formal apology resolution and provide adequate funds for the construction and upkeep of the Chinese Memorial that will be built at Bloomfield Block 14. This memorial project offers the county a crucial chance to make amends for historical wrongs that had a big influence on Portland Chinese American community. The community was cut off from a location of cultural and spiritual significance when Chinese cultural use of the site was stopped and hundreds of Chinese American graves were desecrated, erasing the memory of roughly 3,000 ancestors who were interred there. The Chinese American community places a high value on honoring ancestors, which makes these effects particularly harmful to members of the community. We appreciate Multnomah County's initial allocation of funding for $1 million in support of the project. However, $1 million will not be sufficient to fully fund the project because the initial funding allocation is less than 1/4 of the $2.5 million for memorial construction and the $1.7 million to create a perpetual maintenance fund, which is requested by the community. Not only is it important, is the building of this memorial important because it would honor those who were disrespected and forgotten, but it will also restore the landscape of Block 14 as a place of reflection, remembrance, and education, as well as remind us that every life matters, regardless of race, class, or nationality. Restoring and commemorating Block 14 affirms values of equity, inclusion, and dignity, which is why I wholeheartedly support the proposed apology, along with the $2.5 million funding for construction and endowment fund for the Chinese Memorial Island for Block 14. I urge Multnomah County Board of Commissioners to approve funding for this meaningful project and issue a long overdue apology resolution. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Megan Smith. Megan, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. For the record, my name is Megan Smith, and I serve as a facility administrator for two residential treatment homes with New Narrative. I'm also a family member of someone in long-term mental health recovery and a person with lived experience myself. I'm here tonight to strongly advocate for continued and increased funding for community-based mental health treatment, supportive housing, and the workforce that makes recovery possible. When I began my own journey, I had the privilege of accessing care through private insurance. That meant I received well-rounded services, therapy, skills training, and wraparound services that helped me to build the foundation for lasting recovery. I learned how to regulate, reflect, communicate, and cope, essential tools that I still use today. But now, working in the population we serve, those who often rely on public-funded mental health care, I see the disparity. These foundational skills are often left out of the treatment because of lack of staffing, under-resourced facilities, and gaps in service availability. It's simply not right that the best care is reserved for those who can afford private insurance. Everyone deserves access to quality person-centered mental health support. In my role, I work with individuals facing deep challenges from psychosis and severe mood disorders to legal system involvement and housing instability. But I also see the potential that lies beneath when people are given the right environment, consistency, and care. I've watched residents stabilize, reconnect with loved ones, and start rebuilding their lives. I've seen families, mine included, and begin to heal, and that healing is possible when services are accessible, staffed, and trauma-informed. We need continued investment in workforce wages, non-congregate shelters that use motel-style models, transitional housing facilities, family-centered mental health support, culturally responsive peer-delivered services, and equitable access to skill-building and therapeutic programming. Recovery shouldn't be a rare privilege. It should be the norm, supported by a system that sees the value in every life. Thank you for your time, your service, and your commitment to building a better future for our community.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrew Wilson. Andrew, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I am. Hello, Chair Vager-Peterson, members of the board. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you tonight. My name is Andrew Wilson. I'm the Executive Director of Safety and Security at TriMet. On behalf of TriMet, I want to share our appreciation for the longstanding partnership between our agency and the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. And I offer our strong support for public safety investments as you build your FY 2026 budget. We recognize the many difficult choices facing the board this year, and we thank you for your continued commitment to public safety, community well-being, and thoughtful collaboration. TriMet and the District Attorney's Office have a deep partnership built on the shared goal of making our region's transit system safe, accessible, and welcoming to all. For many people in our region, transit plays a vital role, especially for people with low and limited incomes, older adults, and people with disabilities. We connect people to jobs, opportunities, schools, and essential services. We regularly survey our riders, and what we consistently hear is that safety is one of their top concerns. In recent years, TriMet has made historic investments in safety and security. As we work to continue to keep our system safe and accessible, welcoming, the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office has been a key partner. TriMet also works closely, as you know, with law enforcement partners, including Multnomah County Sheriff's Department, which leads the Multi-Agency Transit Police Division. This work includes a focus on chronic offenders, victim support, and coordinated enforcement efforts that are data-informed, responsive, and designed to reduce harm while improving access for people who rely on TriMet every day. As the board considers this year's budget, we respectfully urge you to maintain and expand funding for the District Attorney's Office so it can continue to serve both immediate safety needs and the long-term goals of our region. Thank you again very sincerely for your leadership and commitment to a safer and more inclusive community.
Thank you. After our next group, we have Elizabeth Jimenez-Lopez, Gabriela Herarte, Chelsea Campbell-Martin, and Andy Miller. Next, we have Todd Littlefield. Todd, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Todd Littlefield with the Lentz Neighborhood Livability Association. For the first time in decades, Portland has lost residences and businesses. Front of mind and the paramount question, why did they leave? Public safety, livability, quality of life, drugs, crime, homelessness, taxes, fees, regulations, the anti-business environment. Sadly, Portland is in an economic doom loop. You must solve these critical components of a civil society. In my neighborhood, we have lawlessness, day and night lawlessness. We have lost our privacy, our freedom, the use and enjoyment of our homes, our sanctuaries. Government's core responsibility, your core responsibility, is public safety. This most important basic service is not being met. It's why we've seen hundreds of businesses move or close, hundreds more on the brink of closing. If and when interest rates fall below 4%, we will see an exodus in mass, and the budget shortfall will be substantially worse than it is today. It's why it's critically important to fully fund the District Attorney's Office. If they do not have all the resources they need to be successful, Portland will not be successful, and that is not acceptable. Thank you for stopping the handing out of tents and tarps. I've had two homeless individuals die under the same tree in front of my home, in tents. So please stop funding organizations that hand them out. For the doom loop to end and to stop residences and businesses from fleeing, the homeless must be away from neighborhoods and businesses and given an area to be, like Dignity Village off Sunderland Road, in one place so you can best and most efficiently provide the best mental, behavioral, and addiction health professionals for those suffering in our streets. Thank you, and please remember the question, why have people and businesses left Portland?
Thank you. Next, we have Destiny Maddox. Destiny, are you able to unmute and begin? Oh, maybe. I think I'm not seeing Destiny. Hannah Schneider, are you able to unmute and begin?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, hi. Hi, Chair Vega Peterson and County Commissioners. My name is Hannah Snyder. I live in District 3, and I'm a community health nurse with Nurse Family Partnership, which has been eliminated from the proposed 2026 budget. As many of you know, Nurse Family Partnership is a model that pairs a highly specialized home visiting nurse with a low-income or high-risk family during pregnancy and through the first 2 years of the baby's life. And the nurses on our team provide unique life-saving interventions to prevent maternal injury or mortality and improve the health outcomes across the lifetime of the baby. This program saves lives and changes lives, and the data really backs this up. For example, NFP families have a 48% reduction in state verified reports of child abuse and neglect by age 15, and a 56% reduction in emergency room visits due to injury or poisoning in the second year of life. Plus, the benefit to cost ratio for Oregon residents is $6.70 for every dollar invested in the program. In the face of unprecedented cuts to federal, state, and local services, public health nurses like NFP and our colleagues at the STI clinic and communicable diseases will be essential to buffer these blows and keep our communities safe and healthy. The fact is that it's incredibly isolating and dangerous to be a birthing parent in this country, and it takes enormous vulnerability and strength to reach out for help, whether you're struggling to parent under financial strain, with mental health or substance use challenges, or with domestic abuse. And because of the consistency and trusting relationships with our clients, my colleagues and I hold countless stories of clients who took that leap of faith in order to lean on our support, but whose outcomes may have been very different if they didn't have an NFP nurse in their lives. I really want to live in a county that believes that our community deserves this type of support. It's really up to us to refuse the idea that birthing parents are disposable. And so I really ask you to refund the public health nursing positions that have been cut from the budget. Thank you, guys.
You're on mute, Marina.
Anna, sorry, thank you. Anna Kornitsky, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. My name is Anna Kornitsky, and I'm the Executive Director of Community Warehouse. For nearly 25 years, Community Warehouse has helped our neighbors overcoming adversity to turn their empty spaces into functional homes. We work with over 200 referral partners, 48 of which are contracted with Multnomah County, and furnish 70 homes each week. With one-time support for Multnomah County, we recently expanded to Gresham and will begin providing services at our new location next week. Furnishing a home is a critical but often overlooked part of housing stability. Without furnishings, our neighbors transitioning out of domestic violence, homelessness, and other adverse experiences are left to sleep on the floor, eat without a table, and struggle to live and thrive in empty homes. In the face of a deficit budget, we understand it's essential we make smart, holistic investments. Furniture poverty really undermines our shared goals and risks returns to homelessness that will further tax the system. Community Warehouse has operated a successful SHS contract with Washington County for 3 years that streamlines access to furniture for SHS participants and frees up agencies to focus on housing placements. Just one of our partner agencies estimated they could have made 40 more placements from housing into from shelter to housing last year if we had a similar partnership in Multnomah County. In this budget, you're ensuring that we maintain every existing shelter bed. When someone moves out of shelter and into housing, they still need a bed. As part of the Welcome Home Coalition and as your community partners, we're calling on you to prioritize housing stability and dignity and urge you to include furniture bank services in the housing budget. Let's ensure that our shared investments in outreach, shelter, and permanent housing don't fall short by leaving people in empty rooms. Thank you.
Thank you. After our next group of four, we have Roxanne Nygaard, Tess Payne, Jennifer Hill-Hart, and Gigi Saban. Next, we have Elizabeth Jimenez-Lopez. Elizabeth, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. Good evening to the chair and the commissioners, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Elizabeth Jimenez-Lopez. I'm a manager, ergo, with the Home for Everyone employment program that's funded through the Joint Office of Homeless Services. I started working in the Home for Everyone program as a career coach back in 2019 and have witnessed how this program has helped participants grow, complete their career goals, and regain stability. I would like to share with you all today a testimony from one of our current participants. As he wrote, "My name is Justice Chukwa. I'm a blind immigrant living in Portland, Oregon. I moved here in 2021 to pursue a career after earning a master's degree from the University of Notre Dame. My professional path was promising until everything changed in 2024 when I lost my job and with it the financial security I worked so hard to build. By 2024, I lost my home and had to rely on family who let me sleep on their couch temporarily as they were planning to move out of Oregon. I had no stable place to live, no job, no sense of direction, and no hope. I was referred to the Home for Everyone program at AFI, where I met Carlos, the Home for Everyone career coach, whose support and advocacy was life-changing. He connected me to Latino Network, which helped me secure accessible housing. Carlos walked me through the entire process, helping me negotiate with housing management, advocacy for disability accommodations, and rental assistance. Carlos then reviewed my resume, helped me prepare for interviews, and introduced me to his supervisor, who stepped in, providing interview practice and checking in on my progress. Thanks to them, I feel seen, valued, and supported. Just as recently had an interview with PSU for their Disability Services Department and is waiting to hear back about this position. I respectfully urge you to fully restore funding for the employment programs through the Joint Office of Homelessness so that we may continue to serve participants like Justice to fully help them succeed. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Gabriela Herarte. Gabriela, are you able to unmute and begin?
I am. Hi, my name is Gabriela Herarte, and I'm the program supervisor for PCDS at Impact Northwest. Today, I want to shed a light on the dedicated staff who are the heart of everything we do. The regional PCDS program provides critical support to families with young children, thanks to a team of compassionate home visitors who walk alongside parents during some of the most challenging and transformative years of their lives. If county funding is reduced, we risk losing the very people who make this work possible. Staff who lead groups, offer home visits, and provide guidance and encouragement to families not eligible for preschool just yet. One powerful example of our impact is a mother who once participated in the program. During her time with PCDS, she felt deeply supported, both emotionally, practically, and personally, by the staff who showed up consistently, listened without judgment, and believed in her potential. That support changed her life. Today, she is a home visitor in the same program that once served her, paying it forward to other families navigating similar paths. Her journey is a testament to the power of this work and the importance of sustaining the people behind it. Her testimony is as follows. "My name is Livia Yu, and I have been working with PCDS for 5 years. But before I joined as a staff member, I was a parent who truly needed support. When I first enrolled in PCDS with my son, I was a new mom trying to figure everything out. My son had trouble speaking and struggled to connect with other children. Through PCDS, my son blossomed. He began to develop more vocabulary and began playing with other kids. My home visitor didn't just help my son. She taught me how to support his growth, how to understand his needs, and how to be more confident in my parenting. That experience changed my life. When I was given the opportunity to work for PCDS, I saw it as a chance to give back to the same community that helped me so much. Now I support other families, many of them going through the same challenges I once did."
And is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Chelsea Campbell-Martin. Chelsea, are you able to unmute and begin?
I am. Hello, thank you for your time. My name is Chelsea Campbell-Martin, and I'm the program manager for the regionally funded Parent-Child Development Services, PCDS, at Impact. The benefits of the regional PCDS program are enormous. If county funding is cut, we will be forced to cut staff, cancel groups, scale back services for families with children ages 0 to 3, a population not covered by Preschool for All. To show the true impact of these services, I'd like to share testimony from one of our participants. She said, "Hello, my name is Rachel. My family has been part of PCDS since 2023, and I can honestly say it has changed our lives. When my daughter was born, we had no nearby family, no parenting role models, and no one to ask for help. As a new stay-at-home mom, I carried the full weight of raising her alone. My upbringing was marked by dysfunction, emotional neglect, and constant conflict. I knew I wanted something different for my child, but I didn't know how to create it. In desperation, I searched online for PCDS and found PCDS. From the very first home visit, I felt something I hadn't felt in a long time, supported, not judged. A specialist came to my home, coached us through parenting challenges, and helped me face fears rooted in my past. I started to believe I could be the parent I always wanted to be. We joined weekly playgroups where my daughter learned to watch, learned by watching other kids, and I connected with other parents going through the same struggles. My husband joined dad's group, which became his only outlet for building confidence as a father. I later joined the parent advisory board where I found my voice and helped to improve the program for others. PCDS has connected us with so many community resources. They fill the gaps when we couldn't. My daughter is now turning 3 and we've applied for Preschool for All, but there's no guarantee we will be accepted and we can't afford private preschool. Without PCDS, we lose our only consistent support system. It's heartbreaking to think that this would be taken away. PCDS helped us break generational cycles. It's not just a program, it's a lifeline. Please keep funding regional PCDS so more families can find what we found, hope, support, and a better way forward. Thank you."
Thank you. Next, we have Andy Miller. Andy, are you able to unmute and begin?
I am. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and commissioners. My name is Andy Miller. I'm the executive director at Our Just Future. We know tonight and through the last several weeks, you're facing enormous pressure to stretch contracting resources to meet expanding needs. Thank you for your leadership in these difficult times. A strategic approach in leaner times means investing in cost-effective permanent solutions. So we were alarmed to learn of drastic cuts in the shelter to housing programs at Our Just Future, TPI, and at other providers. The proposed cut to OJF's shelter and to housing program is over 50% and will leave way too many stuck in shelter for lengthy periods. This is a double bottom line program. It helps shelter residents move into housing and it frees up existing fully funded shelter beds for the next in line, obviating the need to construct one more bed. These cuts will undermine our shared goals of reducing shelter stay length and efficient utilization of existing beds. Please, before we spend to expand shelter, let's fully fund shelter throughput and more efficiently use what we have. We must also continue to invest in our workforce. The starting wages at our organization unfortunately still hover at around $20 an hour, well below the $33 an hour needed to afford housing in our region. While we do not expect to close that big a gap in one budget cycle, currently proposed contract renewal levels with low or no COLAs will reverse the progress we've been making over the last few years. We ask Multnomah County to include a minimum 5% COLA for renewing human services contracts, restore the zeroed out organizational health grants, and commit to rebasing service contracts next year so we can keep moving toward livable wages under county contracts. We deeply appreciate the chair's 50% restoration of employment programming. You've heard a lot of great testimony about that at all of these hearings. We strongly support 100% restoration. These programs help people exit homelessness independently, and the leverage of federal funds through the SNAP 50/50 initiative means more bang for the county's buck for dollars invested in employment. We also support Commissioner Singleton's amendment and ask you to urgently revive the supportive housing expansion RFP. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. After our next four speakers, we have Samantha Ratcliffe, Lauren Brimmer, Sierra Carlson, and Grant Hartley. Next up is Roxanne Nygaard. Roxanne, are you available to unmute and begin?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Roxy Nygaard, and as a volunteer of over 12 years with Multnomah County Animal Services, I'm here once again to ask you to please maintain the after hours emergency support services and current staffing levels of animal care technicians. I recognize the budget challenges you're facing, and I appreciate your continued support of improvements to animal services, but I ask that you consider the very real consequences these proposed cuts will have. Cutting two full-time animal care technician positions from an already short staff team will significantly reduce the care animals receive. These staff provide the essential care that help prevent behavioral decline and illness, and if this reduction goes through, just three people will be left to support the enrichment staff of hundreds of animals. Without enrichment, animals decline, they stay longer in the shelter, they're harder to place, they get sick, that increases the cost in care and decreases their chances of adoption. At the same time, eliminating the after-hours support, emergency support, particularly for foster animals, will have a ripple effect. And I understand the justification, high cost, low usage, but emergency vet care is just that, an emergency. A few cases doesn't mean less importance, it means that those few cases are critical. And without after-hours support, I and many others will have to reconsider continuing. That will lead to more animals housed in the shelter, but they'll now receive less care due to reduced staffing of animal care technicians. More animals, fewer staff, no emergency safety net. This is not a sustainable formula, and it's not a humane one either. Please reconsider these reductions. The animals in our care and those who give their time and hearts to support them are depending on you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Tess Payne. Tess, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I am. Thank you. Good evening. My name is Tess Payne. I'm a Multnomah County resident and on the leadership team at Devluis Emergency Animal Hospital, the county's only provider of 24/7 emergency care for stray and lost animals. Tonight, I'm asking you to restore the modest funding that keeps overnight animal services active, including emergency veterinary care. There are no alternatives for after-hours support for lost animals in our community. Without this funding, 500 sick or lost animals could go without veterinary care next year. But what does no after-hours veterinary care actually look like? For 15 hours a day, every day, there will be no recourse for lost animals needing relief from their illness or injury. On Monday night when I prepared this statement, a Good Samaritan brought a lost dog to Devluis after he was hit by a car. A few hours later, another Good Samaritan brought us a 10-month-old kitten that was coughing up blood and had a dislocated tail. These scenarios are daily occurrences at Devluis. Without the county's funding, those animals would have suffered needlessly, placing the burden on members of the public to care for them and reducing the likelihood of reuniting them with their families. Considering animal services as secondary to human services is flawed. When sick or frightened animals aren't cared for, public health risks rise. Bite injuries could increase as well-meaning citizens replace trained animal control officers. Animals with contagious diseases could go untreated and more. Eliminating after-hours care doesn't just abandon animals, it abandons the people who care for them and contradicts the county's goal to build a budget that helps community members stay safe, healthy, and thriving. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next is Jennifer Hillhart. Jennifer, are you able to unmute and begin? Sorry, Jennifer, there you go.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson, Commissioners. My name is Jennifer Hillhart. I use she, her pronouns, and I live in District 2. I'm the Policy and Program Director at the Oregon Citizens Utility Board, also known as CUB, a statewide consumer advocate for the residential households of for-profit utilities. I'm here today because I believe it is imperative to inform the Commission of the important energy and housing justice work the Multnomah County Office of Sustainability does in the wonky world of energy utility regulation. The Office of Sustainability has been instrumental at the Oregon Public Utility Commission in creating actionable energy affordability solutions for vulnerable populations at risk of disconnection. The office lifts up the crucial public health and housing work from other parts of the county and has been a leader in developing disconnection protections like the COVID-19 pandemic disconnection moratorium and greater access to energy assistance for low-income and immigrant populations, including low-income bill discount programs. I agree with former Commissioner Jayapal. This office punches above its weight and delivers very real and frankly life-saving results for Multnomah County communities. By leveraging bill discounts and disconnection protections, the office is preventing evictions and homelessness and safeguarding public health. Energy affordability is housing justice, is public health justice, is social justice. These issues are intersectional. As an anti-poverty social justice advocate for over 20 years, and as a queer person married to a wonderful woman, I know very well that when we all fail when we pit social justice issues against each other. We have enough to fight right now. Every piece of this work is necessary to create a more just world. I assure you that neither CUB nor any of the 50 plus organizations advocating that the commission reject cuts to the Office of Sustainability are greenwashing. I assure you that the work we are all collectively doing is serious, earnest, and effective. Direct service and system level policy programs are two sides of the same coin. I believe our county commissioners can put their heads together to sustain funding for this office and make meaningful efforts to address the mental health and homelessness needs of our community members. I know you have a difficult job ahead of you. I hope I've provided helpful insight into the importance of this office. Thank you for your time and for your service.
Thank you. Next we have Gigi Saban. Gigi, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, I'm unmuted. Good evening, Chair Vega Peterson and Multnomah County Commissioners. My name is Gigi Saban. I live in District 4 in East Multnomah County. Thank you for the opportunity to come and testify today. I'm testifying as a concerned citizen watching a debate play out in the public related to locating more services in Gresham for our neighbors experiencing homelessness and needing more services. I myself am a Gresham resident, but spend a fair amount of time serving in Fairview, where appetite is much different. Overall, neighbors tend to stay in neighborhoods they are from, and I can confidently say that many homeless individuals and families in Fairview are experiencing a significant vacancy in services. My company, Art of Living Well Incorporated, is working closely with a number of local organizations and our church, Anthem Church, attempting to open a new day space or resource center in the busiest intersection of Fairview that currently serves as a community staple for all kinds of community groups, youth, and more. It is strange to me that we have cities and folks ready for new services further out in East County, and yet people are attempting to force these services in Gresham. Our group, Art of Living Well, proposes to co-locate a day space and severe weather shelter in the heart of Fairview that will also include private behavioral health services, including mental health and recovery from addiction, benefits, navigation, and resources like nutrition support, hygiene services with 8 showers and toilet stalls, a gym, emergency hotel vouchering, and a large gathering space. The building is already a staple in the community neighborhood and currently serves a small population of homeless adults in Fairview who come to eat, connect with community, and receive some basic volunteer services as they are available.
Thank you. After our next 4 speakers, we'll have Sonia Good-Stefani, Maggie Powers, Charlie Pearson, and Leslie Nelson. Next up, we have Samantha Ratcliffe. Samantha, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, Chair and County Commissioners. My name is Samantha Ratcliffe. I'm a resident of District 1, and I am the managing attorney of the immigration team within Metropolitan Public Defender's Community Law Department. I'm here today to urge you to fund the vital programs that we work on at MPD. The programs being cut include the Peer Navigator Program, the Eviction Prevention Program, the Project Reset Program, the Expungement Access System Improvement Program, also referred to as EASY, and the Joint Office of Homeless Services Contract. All of these programs help people get and remain housed and out of the criminal justice system. I can particularly speak to the immigration services under the JOHS contract, Program Offer 30100. We have seen how immigrants are flooding shelters, particularly the growing number of immigrants seeking asylum, and providing timely and effective immigration legal assistance helps obtain immigration benefits,
secure work authorization, and access housing opportunities. One of the most effective solutions to reduce the number of immigrants in homeless shelters is continued and even expanded access to immigration services. Immigration cases can go on for years, some even over a decade. So ongoing support is key and ideally as part of wraparound support, which we are uniquely positioned to provide. For example, we had a client come in to renew his lawful permanent residence, and the attorney noticed they also had an open eviction case, which our EPP team was able to help with. Another client wanted to apply for US citizenship, and in addition to immigration services, our team was able to negotiate down debt she owed, expunged violation cases, and a dismissed misdemeanor case, and provide some assistance even with her divorce petition. Yet another one of our clients came in for assistance with fines and fees that were blocking her Oregon driver's license, which were cut in half after advocacy. And in the course of representation, it was revealed that client had been a victim of a crime and was determined to qualify for U visa. Thank you.
Thank you. Next we have Lauren Brimmer. Lauren, are you able to unmute and begin? Looks like Lauren is not seeing Lauren. Sierra Carlson, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Sierra Carlson. I'm a full-time case manager at Metropolitan Public Defender, and I'm a resident of District 2. I ask you to please keep program 25131B funded. I'd like to share a story about a client of mine who came into MPD's office unprompted last summer seeking help. When I met with my client, I could see that they were visibly struggling. It was hard for them to explain what they were experiencing, but I remained patient and offered a listening ear, allowing them to express their symptoms without judgment. Based on my experience with working with clients in crises, I knew the symptoms they were describing required medical attention. I got my client a meal, the first one they had in days, and afterwards I accompanied them to the nearest hospital. I waited for hours in the waiting room while my client completed the appropriate intake protocol with various hospital staff. After completing the full intake, a staff member came out and informed me that they would be keeping my client for further observation overnight. I received a phone call the next morning saying my client was feeling much better and the hospital had connected them with mental health services. This is just one instance that shows the importance of having a case manager. Of all the places my clients could have turned to, they felt safest coming into their attorney's office when feeling at their lowest. Had my client not had an assigned case manager, they most likely wouldn't have received the necessary medical attention they needed in addition to the continued mental health services. Case managers are vital to helping those most vulnerable regain stability and move forward with their lives. I ask you to please keep program 25131B funded and allow us to continue our work assisting those in our community reach their full potential. Thank you.
Thank you. We have Grant Hartley next. Grant, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, good evening, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the commission. For the record, my name is Grant Hartley. I'm the Multnomah County Director for Metropolitan Public Defenders. I'm here once again advocating for the continued full funding of MPD's case manager program and the legal services provided through our community law division. I want to thank Commissioner Moyer and Commissioner Jones-Dixon for putting forward an amendment to save these programs and thank the other commissioners that have expressed and demonstrated support. These programs offer essential services that help improve public safety. I appreciate the commission making public safety a priority in this budget cycle, but I'd ask that you think critically about what that really means. For too long, a commitment to public safety has merely meant increasing the budgets of law enforcement and district attorneys without an expectation of meaningful or demonstrable results. As someone who works directly in the system, I've seen firsthand what motivates change in those involved in that system. It's stability, being connected with services, having support through hard times, not the threat of prosecution or jail. Our criminal system is a blunt instrument designed to react to harm, not prevent it. Preventing harm requires a holistic approach to public safety by addressing the underlying issues that cause criminal involvement as opposed to simply punishing people for those issues. It requires investment in the community itself in services and programs that provide stability to the vulnerable, that reduce barriers to the poor, and that help guide people out of the system and keep them out. That is precisely what MPD's programs are intended to do. Our community law programs help prevent entry and re-entry to the system by removing barriers to housing and services through eviction prevention, expungement, immigration services, and other necessary legal representation. Our case managers help stabilize those who end up in the system by providing connections to services and supporting them in their journey out of the system. By supporting these programs and others that provide these essential services, you are indicating to our community a true commitment to meaningful and demonstrable public safety. Thank you.
Thank you. After our next group of four, we have Lucas Zhang, Ciara Thompson, Matthew Cavett, and Sonia Arigbon. Next, we have Sonia Goodstefani. Sonia, are you able to unmute and begin?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yep, we can hear you.
Great, wonderful. Hello. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Sonia Goodstefani, and I'm the director of the Community Law Department at MPD. We just learned tonight that an amendment has been proposed or will be proposed to fund some of MPD's programs, and we are so appreciative of that. So far, we haven't seen that our eviction defense program is included. That program is program number 25131C. While we support both the Oregon Law Center and the Commons in getting funding, there are not enough eviction defense attorneys. So we really hope that you will consider our program as well. I'm going to spend the rest of my time highlighting some numbers to prove why funding the programs at Community Law and MPD is smart and cost-effective for the county. 1,987. That's how many clients my team served through the four programs at Community Law last year. 324 of them were eviction defense clients. These clients came to us from 105 different community-based organizations who rely on our legal services to help their participants. 5,188. That's how many motions my team filed in 40 courts in Oregon and immigration courts for those clients. Those motions include expungement, debt waivers, defense of asylum, felony reductions, driver's license reinstatements, and many more. 2.1 million. That's how much debt we have cleared so far this year from indigent clients' records. It is old court debt and fees on cases that blocks expungement and old landlord debt that prevents people from getting housed now. If my research is correct, it costs the county about $22,000 a year for one shelter bed. Our legal services at the Community Law Department cost $562 a year for every client we serve. If the county can pay just $562 to prevent someone from taking up a shelter bed, that's worth it. Our legal services work. Thank you so much for your time tonight.
Thank you. Next, we have Maggie Powers. Maggie, are you able to unmute and begin?
Good evening. My name is Maggie Powers. I am a resident of District 1 and an attorney at the Community Law Division. I am here tonight to ask Commissioner Singleton, Commissioner Brim Edwards, and Chair Vega Penderson to please support Commissioner Moyer's and Commissioner Jones-Dixon's budget amendment. The budget amendment number 3, which is eviction prevention, housing, and expungement. As an attorney, over the last 3 years, I've worked with over or at least 200 individuals through funding from the Joint Office of Homeless Services, helping these clients secure permanent housing. One of my clients was living on the streets with her adult son with disabilities because she had an eviction on her record and her housing applications kept being denied. Through this funding, I was able to help her vacate the eviction and get into permanent housing with her son, where she continues to reside today. And through the funding, through the EASY program, that's the Expungement Access System Improvement Program, in just the last 2 years, I have personally assisted about 375 individuals with the expungement process. Without an attorney, the expungement process is incredibly complex, and pro se litigants who need expungement the most are unable to complete the process or fully understand it. So through that EASY funding, we've been able to help people with the expungement process, including completing it and setting aside their record. So I'm asking you all to support this amendment. Thank you so much. We appreciate your service.
Thank you. Next, we have Charlie Pearson. Charlie, are you able to unmute and begin?
Sure thing. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Great. Madam Chair, Commissioners, thank you so much. My name is Charlie Pearson. I use he, him pronouns. I'm an attorney at MDI, one of your public defenders. I live in District 2, Woodlawn. I'm here to encourage you all to fully fund the Judicial Peer Support and Navigation Services. You've already heard from a few people tonight. I know that you've heard from several more over the last few weeks. I want to share with you the view from the proverbial and I suppose the literal ground floor. When I started in this practice over 10 years ago, just about nobody other than probation officers existed who could connect our clients to social services. When we could get people out of jail, if we could get people out of jail, that happened with little more than the sincere hope that they would find their way to Hooper Detox or to another treatment bed or to a shelter, usually on their own. Now we have case managers. You've already heard about the help that they can provide our clients to go from custody to the community, to stay safe and healthy in the community, to stay successful, not just with their court cases, but also in their lives. And obviously, even though they can't provide help to all of our clients, their expertise spreads throughout our offices, right? Our lawyers, our legal assistants, our investigators, all of our other staff are all more effective for having these experts as resources in our offices. But I want to underscore the importance of having these case managers here for this population of clients. These are some of the highest risk and highest needs neighbors that we have got. They are some of the hardest to reach. They are some of the hardest, they're some of the least trusting people for both service and outreach workers. But almost every one of them can trust their lawyer. Almost every single one of them can trust their lawyer's office. They will work with us. And even relatively short-lived cases usually go on for several months, unfortunately. Often will live for a year. That means that in every one of the cases that our case managers work, they are reaching a vital population for a long period of time across multiple service nodes. They get spectacular and efficient results for our clients. Please keep them here. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Leslie Nelson.
Hello. Thank you, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to present tonight. My name is Leslie Nelson. I'm a lifelong Portland resident, and I've lived in District 1 for 25 years. I'm an attorney at MPD working in the community law department and managing the housing team. I'm urging you to continue funding our eviction prevention program, offer number 25131C. I've been an attorney for 35 years at MPD. For more than 10 years, I've worked to support veterans who are homeless or at risk of homelessness. I've been an eviction defense attorney for over a decade in this county, keeping our veterans housed. What I can say is that I've never seen eviction court be as busy as it is today. And I'm now running the small eviction defense team out of MPD that works to protect low-income tenants from eviction. We're outnumbered in the courtrooms. Most lawyers, about 80%, most landlords, about 80% have lawyers, but less than 1 in 10 tenants have any kind of help. While I appreciate that the pandemic brought to light how important housing is and how money should be invested in keeping people housed, I also see that even though the pandemic is over, the homeless crisis in this county is getting worse. There are more evictions than before the pandemic. In 2019, Multnomah County recorded about 6,000 evictions. And last year, there were more than double that number at over 11,000. This county made the small investment in the last several years to fund eviction defense for low-income county residents because we all saw homelessness get worse and worse. But now is not the time to stop funding eviction defense, or we will just have a bigger problem next year when more are homeless. And now those people also have evictions on their records and old landlord debt blocking them from getting housed. Outcomes for tenants without a lawyer are significantly worse than for those who are represented. And having an eviction on a person's record, not only stands as a barrier to getting new housing, but it also often comes with a lot of debt and trauma. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you will fund our program.
Thank you. After our next group of four, we have Matthew Richardson, Jack Pessy, and Nathan Nyman. Next, we have Lucas Zhang. Lucas, are you able to unmute and begin?
Greetings, commissioners. Thank you for allowing me to testify. My name is Lucas Zhang, and I'm a young member of the Chinese American community here in Portland. And over time, I've learned about the history of anti-Chinese discrimination at Block 14 in Lone Fir Cemetery. And I've really learned about the importance of the place and how its history is truly perhaps one of the most important things that must be told. And as a Chinese American, a Portlander who cares about the well-being of the city, and just an American citizen who believes in the values that this nation upholds of equality, this unfolding story is truly important to me and all the communities I'm part of at all of these levels. So first, it's important to be to the Chinese American community that the past trials of said community be recognized so that they're respected and it does not occur again. And in the context of Portland, this Block 14 upcoming memorial at Lone Fir Cemetery reflects the growing unity, the mending of past injustice, and the creation of a new community that welcomes all. And finally, in the context of America and its democratic values of equality and justice, this memorial represents not only the recognition of past inequality, but also the furthering of justice and the creation of a new system of equality. And thus, as this the importance of this site, of the upcoming memorial, of the projects and efforts surrounding it become more evident, I think it's important for Multnomah County to continue to dedicate part of its budget towards Block 14, its history, and I appreciate all the steps that have been taken, and I think it would be really great if that could be continued and perhaps even furthered. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Ciara Thompson. Looks like they're not available. Okay, next we have Matthew Cavett. Matthew, are you available?
Yes, can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
All right, thank you for your time, you guys. My name is Matthew Cavett. I am a mentor with Iron Tribe Network, which is recovery housing. I do want to give a quick shout out to you, Marina, for pronouncing my last name correctly. That's awesome. And so recovery housing is very crucial to the continuum of housing for people transitioning from houselessness or incarceration. There is a statistic that says if someone stays in recovery housing for 1 year, they have a 70% chance of maintaining that recovery. I was one of those statistics. I've been out there, I've been addicted to drugs, I've been in psychosis, I've been through mental health challenges, and everybody's recovery is different, but it all starts with not wanting to use drugs or alcohol. That's where it starts. The program I'm with, I am a peer for the Multnomah County BURN, the Behavioral Health Resource Network. Assist people in their journey of early recovery, and recovery housing plays a crucial role, and there is not enough recovery housing. So as you guys are talking about any budgets, any investments in recovery housing will benefit our entire community. And in our housing, we also allow, you know, women, children, families, so it's not just men or women, you know, we allow everybody. We are ODHS compliant, and anything you guys can do to help us would be awesome. We have 35 houses right now, so we, you know, keep them foot filled. You know, our budget got cut, we lost one of our mentors who's my counterpart, so like I'm only being able to help so many people. It's all falling on me for my program, so anything you guys can do, we appreciate the help. That's all I got.
Thank you. Next we have Sonia Arigbon. Sonia, are you available to speak? Maybe not. Okay, I'm not seeing Sonia. Okay. And so this is the last group here that I called. So Matthew Richardson, are you available to speak?
Yes, I am. Thank you. My Commissioner Vega Peterson, Members of the Board of County Commissioners, my name is Matthew Richardson, and I support the Nurse Family Partnership Programs in Multnomah County. I apologize for my speaking. I had mouth surgery earlier today, but I couldn't pass up the chance to come and testify in support of the Nurse Family Partnership because of the good it does for families in the county. Nurse Family Partnership partners registered nurses who are specially trained with first-time parents in the county who are facing this economic and social barriers. We're proud to say that in September of last year, Multnomah County was approved to not only serve first-time parents, but also those on subsequent pregnancies, enabling us to reach the part of people in the community in greatest need of services. With the support of a well-trained nurse, a family that's facing barriers like a history of foster care, substance use disorder, being unhoused, intimate personal violence, and other barriers can have this new stage of their life be one of thriving and success. With the proposed removal of funding for Nurse Family Partnership from the budget, we may see over 25 years of a program that's been around for over 25 years now be eliminated. And this comes at a time when there's state funding from the legislature that may be coming to further support Nurse Family Partnership in the county. SB 1033 would direct the state to continue to pay the non-federal Medicaid match funding, which would bring roughly $1 million to further sustain the program in the county. Nurse Family Partnership plays a unique role among the portfolio of home visiting programs. We use registered nurses who engage beginning during pregnancy until the child turns 2 years old. And we have a special skill set with these nurses that can't be made up with just any other program. You know, you have very difficult choices ahead of you. There are a lot of priorities we've heard about today. We ask that you put forward the county funding that enables us to continue drawing down federal dollars and help families in Multnomah County thrive. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Next, we have Jack Pasilla. Jack, you're allowed to unmute and begin.
Correct. No, good pronunciation of my name. We want to support the testimony you heard tonight from Tess Payne, the Dove Lewis spokesperson, to restore this modest funding around $320,000 is the number I've heard. It's imperative that we do this. You have to remember, last year, 500 people drop pets off at Dove Lewis to be treated. And 60% of these people were loyal, good Samaritan citizens doing the right thing. Dove Lewis has been in the community for over 50 years. There's a reason for that. Care needs to happen to animals after hours. I just called your animal control line tonight, and Dove Lewis is the only line referral clinic available currently. So remember, if you cut that line item, you're going to have to come up with a solution for those 500 people to make a referral to certain clinics or care. And if that's not going to be available, then Dove Lewis will more than likely not be able to accept these animals. Dove Lewis is one of the top hospitals in the nation. We're so lucky to have it in the community. And for you not to fund this, after COVID, the animal community increased dramatically. So the need is more now, greater now than ever. I am currently on the Investment Advisory Board for Multnomah County. And in the past years, I've chaired the Citizen Budget Committees for Multnomah County over through Bev Stein and Diane Lynn. So I have a knowledge of this. This is important, and I know you're going to be supportive, and we'll be there June 12th to see your vote. Thank you for your assistance.
Thank you. Next, we have Nathan Naiman. Nathan, are you available to unmute and begin? Hi, Nathan. I have you. I sent you a request to unmute. Are you able to do so?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, sorry about that. I'll start again. Good evening, commissioners. My name is Nathan Naiman, representing Sport Org. Set program number 1033, Economic Development for Spectator Activities and Events, continue to be funded in the upcoming budget. The county's support has in part had a striking return on investment so far. In fiscal year 24-25, sport tourism has contributed 50,000 contracted hotel room nights to Multnomah County's local, which is estimated to bring upwards of $40 million of new economic impact. Your support allows Sport Oregon through its foundation to continue its success throughout the county by reaching diverse and economically challenged communities and to support youth and with leadership skills, confidence, and success through sports. Our She Flies initiative fosters safe community spaces where all girls and women, particularly those in underserved communities, realize the many benefits that participation in sports provides. Sport Oregon supports several county nonprofit organizations, enabling the provision of culturally specific programs. Active Children Portland delivers 30 weeks of after-school programming to over 1,200 elementary and middle school students at 30 different schools throughout the county. The Center for African Immigrants and Refugee Organization and the African Youth and Community Organization use youth sports to support the immigrant and refugee community. Your funding helps us support Special Olympics Oregon, which provides year-round sports training and athletic competition for children, youth, and adults living with intellectual disabilities. Also supporting Adaptive Sports Northwest, which provides fitness, recreation, and competitive sport to anyone with physical and visual disabilities. Our support of Alajente Mujeres and Scott Soccer Academy helps youth develop leadership skills, problem solving through play. Please continue funding number 1033. Your funds are used to spur economic growth and enhance positive social impacts through sport for Multnomah County, promoting economic development in the county while at the same time generating positive social inclusion and vibrant communities through sport is a unique quality. You are playing part in playing a big part of this success. We hope you continue to do so. Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, I looked through the list with Tasia, and it looks like that was the last testimony we received for today that is available to testify.
Thank you so much, Marina. Thank you, Tasia, for double checking to see that if anyone else who signed up who was in the room today. Appreciate all the testimony that we've heard tonight. Thank you everyone for joining our third public budget hearing for our FY26 budget. I know Marina said at the beginning that were hundreds of written testimonies that were also shared with the board on this. And so we appreciate the advocacy on that. Be assured that all of the board receives those written testimonies and that we look at them as we're making our final budget decisions. Just a reminder, our final budget vote will be on June 12th at our regular board meeting on that Thursday. We appreciate your time. I also want to just make a note that on these, in addition to the board whose faces you see during these meetings, we have so many different folks from around the county, our department directors, our folks from our chief operating officer's office, from my office, from our commissioner staff offices. So just appreciate all of the time and attention that our employees have given to this meeting as well. So thank you everyone for being with us tonight. We appreciate all your investment in this process. The board will reconvene tomorrow morning for our regular board meeting, but for now we are through for this evening. So thanks everyone. Have a wonderful night.